Okay, great. Okay, Sichas Haran Os Nun Vav. Chodesh Tov to one and all. Yesh b'nei Adam shenidma alayam shehem rachokim me'eza taivos gedolos. There are some people who think that they're very far from certain big desires, from certain great desires. Imagine that you've conquered a certain desire. What does he mean by that? Kagon mitaivos mamon. I'm not obsessed with money. That's not my Yetzirah. A person sometimes thinks that certain taivos, such as taivos mamon, the desire for wealth, it's not his thing. He doesn't have that taiva. He's very far from that taiva. So says Rabbi Nachman, what we're going to talk about today is the importance of being honest and self-aware. Says Rabbi Nachman, is that really true? Is it really true that you don't have taivos mamon? Maybe you think you don't have taivos mamon, because you have other taivos or other problems that are more in your face and you're more aware of, to the point that you're not even aware of some of the other things that, other problems that you have. Again, Rabbi Nachman talks about, we mentioned it, he talks about taivos mamon a lot. He talks about the taiva for women a lot. Right? If you remember, we mentioned in passing, for those who have the whole Sefer, in Kuftes Vav, Rabbi Nachman says, Iker ha-nisayon shall call adam b'olam hazeh, hu b'taiva zos shall niyuf. The greatest taiva that most people face in this world is the taiva for sexually immoral behavior. The taiva for sexual desire. Va'afilu taiva samamon afal pishi taiva gru ma'od v'yavoda zara mamish. Rabbi Nachman writes in Kuf Tes Vav, Sichas Haran Kuf Tes Vav, that even though the desire for money is mamish avodah zarah, and it's a huge taiva, and it's a terrible state of being, but the taiva, one's sexual desires and the struggle with that taiva, is much harder and much more significant for most people. So says Rabbi Nachman now back in our piece in Nun Vav. So you might think, I don't have taivas mamon. Right? I know some people are really, they're crazy about money. Like all they think about is money. But I don't think about money all the time. So says Rabbi Nachman, do you not think about money all the time because you don't have that taiva? Or maybe you have other taivas that are even bigger than taivas mamon, to the point that you think like, oh, taivas mamon, that's not my taiva. Maybe it is a problem that you have, and you're just not focused on it or even working on it, because you have other things that are drowning it out. Dasha afal pichin, he writes in the second line. Yachol yos shu garua yoser mechavero shu meshuka ba'oso ataiva. You look at someone else, you say, this person has, you know, again, this insatiable desire for money. So you'll say, I'm not like that guy. I'm not chasing dollar bills like that guy. So says Rabbi Nachman, it could be that actually you have it worse than your friend, who you're able to identify is completely sunken into this taiva. So why are you worse off if you don't even think you have it? Rabbi Nachman says, because you're just lying to yourself. Dehainu sheyesh lo eiza taiva acheres, shehu meshuka ba kol kach, we're reading now where it's bolded, that maybe you have another taiva that you're so deeply sunken into, ad she'afilu tavas mamon v'keyotze b'zeh, she taiva gedol ma'od, to the point that when it comes to other desires, like the desire for wealth and the like, which is a very significant desire, he says, nisbatla etzlo keneged oso ataiva. That smaller Yetzirah, so to speak, you hardly recognize because you're so consumed with your bigger Yetzirah. On a relative scale, says Rabbi Nachman, it could be you look at someone else and say, oh my God, that guy's like crazy about money. It could be you're more crazy about money. But you're even crazier about something else to the point you don't even realize how crazy you are about money. That's a scary thought. And that's really bad when we lose our ability to be self-aware of what's going on in our life. I allow other things to overshadow some very significant problems. Again, I might say, well, I'm dealing with a more significant problem. Okay, but I have to be able to make a cheshbon nefesh. I have to be able to assess all of my problems. And I can't get so caught up in my biggest problem to the point that I don't think I have other problems. I have to be able to look at the big picture, recognize what's going on. Nimsa shehu garua yosa. So he says, you, relative to your friend, again, you identify, my friend has a terrible problem in his pursuit of wealth. I don't have that problem. Says Rabbi Nachman, you have it worse. Why? Ki hu meshuka kol kach be'eza taiva, because you are so, again, deeply immersed in another desire, achafilu taiva gedola shel mamon v'kiyotze, nisbatel etzlo machmas ha-taiva. You're so badly, in such a bad place with this other desire, to the point that you don't even realize a huge problem that you have. It's not a minor problem. Taivas mamon, he says, is avodah zarah mamish. So the fact that it's being overshadowed by an even bigger desire, and the fact that you're like not recognizing it, doesn't make it better. It makes it actually a lot worse. That you're not self-aware. You don't even realize what's going on. Even if you'll say, again, compared to my bigger problem, this is, again, a smaller problem, says Rabbi Nachman, so what? So that gives me permission to what? To be so consumed with the bigger problem to the point that I don't have to care about the smaller problem. Imagine, again, a person has taivas niuf. He has very strong sexual desires. He feels that he's struggling with that temptation. So the fact that what? So the fact that that is so dominant in his life, he doesn't have to pay attention to, he doesn't have to notice or pay attention to the fact that he has a taivas mamon problem. So you'll say, well, but it's small compared to my bigger problem. Right? Yeah, but it's still a huge problem. So how could you just ignore it? A nafkamina klal, says Rabbi Nachman. Me'achashu meshuka ba'kol kach at shetayva gedola nisbatel etzlo al yedei zek and iskra le'el. It's simply being overshadowed, as we explained above. U'kamosh mesino, as we sometimes see, sheyesh action. You could have a person who's so stubborn, right, who gets so caught up in one thing that you'll do anything for that one thing. What does he mean? He gives an example. Kigon tinok shebishvil akshanas levad yachol lahafkir atzma lagamri. Sometimes a child is so angry at a parent, right, or a baby is so stubborn in its ways that what? That it'll be mafkir itself completely. To make a point, it'll do something unbelievably ridiculous. What does that mean? It's like a baby I don't know if he's saying a baby that's like smack head into the side of its crib, or a baby that's banging its head into the wall, in the one of the English translations of the Sichas Aran, right? But sometimes a child will do, to make like a point, the child will do something that will inflict damage upon itself. As an act of making a point to show the parent that I'm angry, right? So the kid smacks into the wall. It happened, it's like it's totally irrational. I think there was a basketball player who like didn't like a call and like went over to the wall and like smacked down into the wall and had like brain damage from it. He was mad at the ref, so he totally lost himself. He was so, right, to the point that he didn't even recognize that I'm going to hurt myself. But he was so consumed by the fact that he didn't get the call on that play that he went over, right, and it happened multiple times. People like, you know, they punch the wall and they break their fist. Well, like, what were you thinking? You know the damage that that's going to cause. I know, but I was so consumed by like the bigger thing that a very significant thing, like breaking my wrist if I'm a basketball player, that was pretty stupid, right? But it got totally overshadowed. It was totally lost in the mix. So as a sign of akshanus, of stubbornness, keneged emo, the baby strikes his head against the wall. Sha'osa lo lahachis. It does it just to anger its parent, or in response to the anger it feels towards its parent. Kamo kein yesh b'nei adam shi'ocha lahafkir hakol. So too there are people who sometimes, again, they let themselves live with a sense of abandonment, a total disregard for themselves, ulesale kol ataivos, and to ignore all of the taivos, as if it's hefker, as if he doesn't have to think about it, b'shvil eza taivo akshanas shirotza. Because he's so caught up in one particular taiva, or because he's so stubborn about his lack of willingness to change, right? That he becomes so consumed by A that he ignores B, C, D, E, F. And sometimes B, C, D, E, and F, v'chulu, are very significant things. So Rabbi Nachman's encouraging us to not lose sight of kind of everything that's going on in their life. Don't allow the biggest thing to overshadow some of the smaller things. Again, I'll give you a simple example. It doesn't have to only be taivas. It could be a person is so consumed by a test that he has coming up in college that he loses sight of the fact that he's not davening, he's not learning, he's not, right? Now, if you ask him, do you care? Like, if you would ask him point blank, do you care about davening? Do you care about learning? Do you care about your avodas Hashem? Of course I do. Right, so do you realize that you've thrown it all aside for this test that you're totally consumed by? And so, like, when you challenge the person to think, or you challenge yourself to think like that, you say, wow, you know what? I really have allowed myself to completely ignore things that are really important just because I have this one thing in front of my face that's consuming me entirely. Okay, Harris, you wanted to say something? Right. So it could be both, right? It could be many things that are causing me to miss one thing, or it could be one big thing that are causing me to miss many relatively smaller things, right? Again, what's ironic and what's sad is that Rabbi Nachman is describing a person, if I saw someone else acting this way, I'd say that person's out of control. But because I'm so much more out of control in a different way, that I don't even like have time to process how out of control I am in this way. It takes a deeply honest person to be able to, again, practically, maybe you have to deal with the biggest thing first, but to completely ignore all of the secondary things and to make it as if, like, the big thing is all that matters right now. No, the other things are causing damage. This baby is trying to make a very significant point, right, but it's hurting itself in the process. Yeah. Right, that's a very good point. Right, taivas have to be... Taivas have to be guided. There's a Gemara in Chulin that says that for every forbidden thing in the world, there's a positive opposite. Right? So the Gemara says, if you would want to enjoy the taste of bacon, there's a certain fish that has the taste of, if you fry up the tongue of this particular fish, it'll taste exactly like bacon. So for everything that Hashem prohibited in the world, Hashem made a kosher equivalent of it. Right? So you'll say, well, what about, I'm not trying to be crude by using this example. This is the Gemara's example. The Gemara says, well, what about adultery? What about adultery? The pasuk says stolen water is sweet. Why do people get so caught up in that taiva, right? Because there's something very intense about doing something you know you shouldn't be doing. Right? So what about that? What's the kosher version of that? So the Gemara says, if you marry someone who was once married to someone else, there's an element of that taiva, right? Like, I got this guy's wife. I'm sorry to speak in a crude fashion, but that's what the Gemara says. So even like the most extreme things, right? Whatever that sick pleasure of taking advantage of another man's wife, right? Chazal say there's a way, beheter, if she divorced her first husband and you remarried her, there's an element of that, right? And there's an element of tasting bacon in the taste of that fish. So the Gemara is saying that it's not that Hashem wants us to live a life, again, we're not, our priests are not taking an oath of celibacy. Right? The first mitzvah of the Torah is Purur Ravu. Hashem wants us to have healthy, normal sexual relations and relationships. But everything has to be done in the right context. So 100%, it's not about killing our taivos. It's about learning how to control them and to redirect them and to make sure that they're used properly. Yeah?
Yeah, but then, I understand, but then when it comes to, I guess, taivos mama. Okay, so I understand we should be consumed by it. Throw everything to the side, and we just kind of like work all day.
Right.
But does that mean that we're not supposed to be getting jobs that really take up so many hours that we're not supposed to really?
I don't know. You have to think about it. Yeah.
To get so much money, really, what you should be doing is we should have, I guess, the bare minimum that we need to survive for our family.
Again, it's a question of what the game plan is, right? I heard a story over Shabbos from someone in Los Angeles. I forget the people involved, and it doesn't matter. They're billionaires. So there was a. So I heard this from a frum couple. They said they went on a little vacation, and they went kayaking somewhere, and they saw, like, out in the water was this massive yacht. This massive, massive yacht. So they found out it belonged to so and so. I forget exactly what there was, some type of business connection that this guy had to this billionaire. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he said something to him about the boat, and he said, you know, and then he mentioned this other person who was building. Oh, that's what it was. The guy who was telling me the story has a business connection to some even bigger billionaire who's in the middle of building some insane boat. So he mentioned it to this other billionaire, and he said, you know, he said, I once learned an important lesson in humility from this other guy, from this bigger billionaire. He said, why? He said, because we were, you know, he has a yacht and I have a yacht, but his yacht is like much bigger than mine. You know, my yacht only costs like $50 million and his costs like $80 million. And he says, my yacht was once parked next to his yacht in some port in some whatever. And he said, and I felt, you know, I just like, I felt very humbled being next to his. So this fellow who was telling me this story said he told this story over to someone who works with this, you know, the junior billionaire. And he's like, what? That's not the story. He's like, that's how he told you the story, what? He said, that's not what happened. He said he called us from his yacht at like 2 in the morning, some of his like top employees, saying, you know how embarrassed I was? I was parked next to so-and-so's yacht, which is like, you know, 1.5 times the size of my $50 million yacht. He's like, we need to start working hard. We need to start making more. We need to, like, I need to build a bigger yacht. I was so embarrassed with my tiny little yacht next to this guy's yacht. Type of someone, you know? Guy's sitting on a $50 million yacht, and he's humbled, or the true story is he's terribly embarrassed that someone else has an $80 million yacht next to him. It's crazy. So yeah, so you have to figure out, like, what's the plan, you know? Chazal say, a person is never satisfied with half of his desires. Ein Adam Meis, a person doesn't leave this world with half of his desires in his hand. What is the end of that statement in Chazal? If he has a mana, he wants masayim. If he has 100, whether it's 100 bucks or $100 million, he wants masayim, he wants 200. So there's a great question. I'll tell you a great question. The Maharam Shif, who has his ha'aros in the back of the Gemara, in Maseches Chulin, so Maharam Shif asks an amazing question. I may have told you this once. Maharam Shif says, let's look at Chazal again. What does Chazal say? What does Chazal say? A person doesn't leave this world with half his desires in his hand. If he has 100, he wants 200. Nu, what's the question? Well, what? Also true. But what's the question? He doesn't have half his desires. 100 is half of 200. Right? Basic math. Maharam Shif in Maseches Chulin in the back has a section called Drush Madim. Nice vartlach. And he asks that question. You hear the question? Doesn't leave this world with half his desires fulfilled. If he has 100, he wants 200. Says the Maharam Shif, a little basic math, 100 is half. That is half. He does have half. So I told this to someone, when the guy told me this story about the boat over Shabbos, I told him this Vart. So he had a good shot. I'll tell you his shot in a second. Maharam Shif, though, says the following. Maharam Shif said, it's such a deep psychological insight. He says, it's true. It could be that 100 is half 100. But the 100 you don't have is worth so much more in your mind than the 100 that you do have. If I only had another $1 million, if I only had another $100 million, right? I have a $50 million yacht with everything you could possibly imagine, but if I had an $80 million yacht or a $100 million yacht, then I'd really be satisfied. That dimyon, that the next, you know, whatever amount of millions is gonna make me truly satisfied, makes it seem like it's bigger than the half that you do have. I told this to someone over Shabbos, and he said back to me an answer that's more like what Vel was saying, which is what? Which is, if you have a million, and then you're going to want 2 million, well, then after you get to 2 million, you're going to want 4 million, right? So the 1 million compared to 4 million is not even half. And then you're 4, you're going to want 8. So, like, you're not even close to half. It's just like an endless cycle of wanting to double, to double, to double. So compared to where you're starting, you'll never even have half. It'll always just be shrinking in terms of, like, what you have. You always just want more and more and more and more. But again, it depends on, you know, If a person can get a good job and make some money with the goal of making enough money to provide for his family and to live comfortably, and to retire early and to live a life of Torah study and to give a lot of tzedakah, again, it's all a question of kavana. Where am I going with it? But when I get into that, the point I'm trying to make is when you get into that race, yeah, to build the biggest house in the community, because it's not like embarrassing enough that your house is already bigger than like the whole shul, you know, but you need an even bigger house because some other Jewish guy came and built an even bigger house, right? So then you have to ask yourself, like, how sick am I? Like, what's wrong with me? Why am I trying to sustain myself off of Taivas Mamon? So it's, yeah, but it's a real thing. He calls it Avodah Zarah Mamish. You see how a person can become Meshubit to it. Yeah.
So when you say that the Gemara has, like, it says that for everything that has negative is a positive.
Right.
Is that, the whole case of adultery, like, it seems like, is the Gemara implying, like, this is a bidyevet, that, like, someone has a title like this, should, like, bidyevet, you should do this?
Yeah, I mean, again, halavai, we shouldn't feel the need to. But the point I think the Gemara is trying to make is, you know, you shouldn't necessarily have the need to try everything in the world. But you should know that if you have certain desires, there are kosher ways to achieve those desires. I mean, you shouldn't think that Hashem put you in a situation in life where the things that I need for my, just like, you know, the desires that I have, they don't fit with Torah. It's impossible for me to live a Torah lifestyle. There are kosher versions of all the forbidden pleasures. Right? Again, lav dafka, that a person should spend his life experiencing all those things. Right? But at the same time, the Gemara does say that Hashem wants us to enjoy His world. There's Yerushalmi at the end of Maseches Kedushin that says that Hashem wants us to enjoy His world. There's a reason He put us in a world with lots of delightful kosher things for us to enjoy. It's just a question of, am I enslaved to that pleasure, or am I able to enjoy it and say, wow, thank you Hashem for making life pleasurable and enjoyable. Yeah. Again, I told you in the past, that's sort of the difference between David HaMelech and Avram Avinu. David HaMelech says, I killed my Yitzhara. Libi chalal bikirbi. I quieted my heart. Right? So I killed the Yitzhara. That's one madriga. And Avram Avinu says, I turned my Yitzhara into a Yitzhar Tov. Right? So you see that there's different ways to kind of deal with it. Sometimes this Yitzhara is so out of control that I have to kill it. It's like the Rambam who says you're trying to walk the middle path in life. If you're very extreme, sometimes you have to go to the opposite extreme. The Gemara says in the fifth parak of Sukkah about man's sexual desire. Right? The Gemara says there's a limb in man's body, reference to the bris milah. The more that you learn to control it, the more it'll be under control. The more you allow it to experience pleasure, the more insatiable its desire becomes. Right? So sometimes you have to, squash the Yetzirah by not feeding it, even feeding it in a kosher way. You have to show restraint. But again, it's for each person in each situation, there's a mix of things. Am I trying to uproot this temptation? Am I trying to learn to control this temptation? Am I trying to redirect this temptation? Am I trying to, reprogram myself to find the kosher version of that same desire that I have? Okay, these are all very meaningful things to think about. Okay? The challenge is that it's hard sometimes to just be self-aware and to see what's really going on. There's a great maisa, I think I also mentioned it in the past, but I'll share it now because it's so appropriate for this. The Beis Yisrael, the fourth Ger Rebbe, was once talking to the Alexander Rebbe. It's obviously not our Alexander Rebbe, the Yismach Yisrael, because he passed away in 1910, and the Beis Yisrael passed away in 1977. So it's one of the, I don't know which Alexander Rebbe it was, but the fourth Ger Rebbe, the Beis Yisrael, was talking to the Alexander Rebbe, and he saw that he was very tzibrachin, he was very bent out of shape about something that was weighing on him, and he looked very down. The Beis Yisrael looked very down. So the Alexander Rebbe said, "I want to tell you a pshat on the pasuk and a little story." He said, "One of the hardest psukim to understand in the Torah is at the end of the tochacha. What does the pasuk say? Why are all these horrible things going to happen to you? You read Parshas Kisavo, it's mamish, a description of the Holocaust. And why is all this going to happen to you? What does the Torah say? Such a strange pasuk. Tachas asher lo avadatas Hashem Elokecha b'simcha uvetuv levav meirov kol. Because you didn't serve God with joy." Really? You're telling me I served God, but I was like not into it enough. So Hashem brought the Holocaust. I learned Torah every day, and I davened, and I put on tefillin every day, and I kept kosher, and I kept Shabbos. I just like wasn't as into it, you know, as someone else who was like super into it. But I did it. I kept it. Very proudly kept it. So you're telling me, tachas, why did all this happen? Because of or in place of all of the lack of simcha that you had in the Vodas Hashem, that's why these most horrific descriptions in the Torah took place? It's hard to understand. So he said, I'll tell you a story. He said, there was once a kid in school who was learning Aleph Beis. And his Rebbe was testing him. He was just learning how to, you know, he learned the letters, learning the Nekudos. So his Rebbe called on one of the boys, and he said, Patach Aleph. What sound does it make? Right? Patach is the line under the Aleph. Patach Aleph. Beryl, Patach Aleph. So he says, ah, good. Yankel, Patach Beis. Ba, good. You know, next kid. Avemela. Patach Gimel. What sound does it make? Ga. Right? Good. So he's going on. He's asking each of the kids, you know, to make sure that they know their nekudos. So he says to one of the boys, right? And he's testing them to make sure they know the nekudos. What's this one called? What's that one called? What sound does it make when you combine it with this letter? A bunch of little kids learning Aleph Beis. So finally he gets to one boy, and he says, Mendel. He says, Mendel, what's under the hay? And he sees Mendel turns like white. He's like, Mendel, what's under the hay? So he's like, what? Yeah, he has no idea what's going on. They're so confused. So he takes the boy aside. He takes him out of the class. And he says, Mendel, what's going on? He says, Rebbe, I'm not allowed to say. He's like, what are we not allowed to say? He said, my father told me if I tell anyone what's under the hay, I'm going to get in big trouble. So the Rebbe started to realize his father must have like had some shady business deal, and he hid some money under the haystack in his yard, and he told his son, if you ever tell anyone what's under the hay, you're going to be in big trouble. So his Rebbe's asking him in class, Mendel, what's under the hay? What's under the Aleph, I can tell you. What's under the Gimel, I can tell you. Rebbe, I'm not allowed to say what's under the hay. So the Ger Rebbe smiled. So the Alexander Rebbe said to him, he said, what the Torah says, he said, I'm not going to explain how this Pasuk explains the whole Holocaust that's being described. But you know what the Pasuk is saying to us? Tachas asher lo avartas Hashem Elokecha. Let's just pause right there. Forget the Simcha tu leva mirov kol. Just the first part of the Pasuk. A Jew has to ask himself, Tachas asher lo avartas Hashem Elokecha. What's Tachas? What's underneath? What's really the underlying cause of why Asher lo avatas Hashem Elokecha. Tachas asher lo avatas Hashem Elokecha. He said to the Beis Yisrael, he said, you're very upset about something. You admitted it to me. He told me. You confided in the Alexander Rebbe. He said, this thing is weighing on me. So Alexander Rebbe said to him exactly what Rabbi Nachman is saying in this piece. He said, Ger Rebbe, just make sure, check yourself carefully. It's a good vart for us also on Rosh Chodesh Adar. Right? Check yourself carefully. Make sure that the thing that's really upsetting you is the fact that what? That whatever this issue is really weighing upon you. Maybe something else is bothering you and you're just not really getting to like the core of it. So tachas, a Jew has to always ask himself, what's underneath? Someone comes to me and says, Rebbe, I'm having a hard time getting to shir on time. Why am I having a hard time getting to shir on time? It's very hard for me to get up in the morning. Right, why is it hard for you to get up in the morning? I think I have like a sleep, you know, issue, sleeping issue. Okay, now you might have a medical, you know, sleeping issue, or you might just like have something else that's going on and you're assigning it to something else. Right? And you're using that so-called medical condition as an excuse for why you can't get to shir on time. Right? So tachas, what's really underneath it? Right? Is that maybe you don't like learning, maybe you don't value learning enough. If you have to get up for the job interview, somehow you'd be able to do it. So what's like really underneath whatever it is that you're going through? That's how a Jew has to ask himself. And that's what I've been saying here. Sometimes, again, in our life, we just see the biggest thing that's going on in our life, and everything else is hefker, and that's not okay. We have to try to notice all of the things that are going on in our life. Take a look at source number two. Mishnah Meseches Nega'im, which talks about the laws of Tzara'as. Kol ha-nega'im adam roeh chutz mi-nigei atzma. It's a halacha, but it's also a musarvar. What's the halacha? The halacha is a person's not allowed, even if he's a Kohen, right, to rule on his own tzaras. Kol nigaim adam roeh, a person's allowed to see tzaras, chutz mi nige atzmo. You're not allowed to what? You're not allowed to see your own tzaras. You're not allowed to look at it, but I'm saying you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to rule on it. But many, many Sifrei Drush and Musar and Chassidus pick up on this Mishnah and say, this is just a psychological reality of man. Right? Kol Nigam Adam Roa. I can see all sorts of Nigam. I can see all sorts of things that are messed up. I can look at my friend and say, oh my gosh, this guy, his life is like out of control. But why don't you see Nige Atzmo? Why aren't you recognizing your own problems? Very easy for you to point out and to recognize the flaws of other people. But what about your own flaws? Chazal are revealing to us, Kol Nigam Adam Roa. It's very easy to see when your friend has the slightest problem. You might have a huge problem that you're totally ignoring. So tachas, what's underneath? Right? What's underneath? What are you ignoring? What are you avoiding? That's why the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, in source number 3, Ezehu Gibur HaKovesh Es Yitzro. Who is the one who's truly strong? The one who conquers his Yetzer Hara. Explains the Koznetzer Magid in the Sefer Avodas Yisrael. Ratzel Lomar, Shitzarich Kol Echad LaHashkiach Al Yitzro. A person needs to watch over his Yetzer Hara. Dahainu B'masha Ragu LaHachshilo U'LaKovsho. To learn to recognize patterns in my life. I've been stumbling in this Avera for years, and I haven't dealt with it yet. Recognize it and kovesh, conquer it, suppress it. Lo kumo shaksilim osim, shemashkichim tamid al roa midos chavero. Not like the foolish individuals who are always so busy, very, very involved in pointing out other people's faults. Very busy noticing, right? Being mashkiach, watching over other people and their problems. V'nechshav be'einav k'tzadik, and he thinks that he's a tzadik. U'mi yodeya efshar hu garua mibedos mechavero. Maybe you're worse than your friend. You're just so busy looking at your friend's problems that you haven't stopped to look at your own problems. Lakach omar yitzro dafka. Says the Koznetzer Magid, what word is he emphasizing in this Mishnah Pirkei Avos? Ezehu gibor, you know who's truly strong? HaKovesh as Yitzro, he conquers his Yitzhara. It's very easy for me to go around and say, like, what? What's that guy's problem? I could conquer that Yitzhara. I could handle that situation. Shkoyach, so you're conquering your friend's Yitzhara. Shkoyach. You're accomplishing nothing like that. Other than being a really insensitive person. Not putting yourself in that person's situation. And say, oh, if I was in that situation, for sure I'd make the right choices. Chazal says, stop being so busy with other people. Ezo gibor HaKovesh is Yitzro. Look at your own Yitzhara. Figure out what your own Yitzhara is and work on it. Right? Not to, again, overcompensate by being the tzaddik who's so busy helping other people to fix their problems with his holier-than-thou attitude. And by the way, when you see someone else do an Avera, we have a klal from the Baal Shem Tov. If you see someone else do an Avera, you know what that means? You know what the Sfarim say? It means that you still have that Avera yourself. Hashem does not allow you to see Averos if you are completely freed from that Avera. So that means if you have perfected your Shmira Seinayim, you will never come into contact with something, right, even by chance, that's unholy for a person to see. And if you've perfected your Lashon Hara, you will never overhear someone speaking Lashon Hara. And if your Shabbos is the way that it's supposed to be, you'll never see someone else not keeping Shabbos. If you see someone else not keeping, if you see someone else speaking Lashon Hara, if you see that someone else is not taking their davening seriously, Hashem is saying, hey buddy, I'm pointing out to you, the reason you're seeing this is because you've got the same problem, maybe to a lesser degree, but don't look at him and say, how can he live that way? The whole reason you're seeing it is because Hashem wants you to realize you also have that problem. That's what the B'nai Yisachar brings from the Baal Shem Tov in source number 4. The B'nai Yisachar in his writings on Tishrei says, Mekubal biyadeinu me'ez talmidei Baal Shem Tov. We have a Kabbalah, we have a tradition from the holy Baal Shem Tov. Afilu hatzadik, kisharoa eza avera be'ez adam. You could be a really, really, really good Jew. But if you see something bad, if you see an avera by anyone, hine zevadai eno b'mikra, it's not by chance. There's a reason God wanted you to see that. V'lama hizmin Hashem yisparach asher hu yira osa avera. So why did Hashem invite you to see that avera, so to speak? You're a tzaddik. Why should you see it? Al karchach, he says, where it's bolded, it must be of necessity. She yesh biyado gam kein shemetz ma. It must be that you have a shemetz ma. That means a small measure, right? A small stain. Midugmas osa avera. A little bit of that avera you must have. Again, maybe not on that level. Ve'erah min ha-shamayim, and you're being told by the heavens, Hashem is sending you a sign, b'chdei she'afashay shemaisav, that you should make a cheshbon ha-nefesh. And he says a story about something that happened to the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov himself, Sifru mitalmidei Baal Shem Tov, they say that one time, she'era she'ra be'echad she'chil ha-shabbos p'far hesya. The Baal Shem Tov Shabbos was Kodesh Kedoshim. And yet the Baal Shem Tov once saw someone, a Jew, publicly disgracing and violating Shabbos, desecrating the Shabbos. So the Baal Shem Tov thought to himself, why did I see that? Why did Hashem allow me to see that? What's imperfect? He didn't say, oh, this guy's a shagun, he's no good. Baal Shem Tov said, hold on, I saw that. That means I have my Shabbos is not what it's supposed to be. That's the only reason I would have seen such a thing. So the Baal Shem Tov started thinking, what's wrong with my Shabbos? And he started thinking about his Shabbos. Maybe it's my Arab Shabbos. Is it the way that I go to the mikvah before Shabbos? Is it my Kabbalah Shabbos? Is it my Kiddush Friday night? Is it my chulent? Do I not make a good chulent? Baal Shem Tov was thinking, where's the problem in my Shabbos? Should I sing more Zmiros at Shalosh Shudas? Like, what am I doing wrong? And he went through his Shabbos and he said he couldn't find anything wrong with his Shabbos. So you know what the Baal Shem Tov did? Instead of saying, okay, I guess, you know, I just saw this by accident, he said, wait a minute. Shabbos means not only Shabbos. In the Zohar, Talmidei Chachamim are called Shabbos. Talmidei Chacham, Tzadikim, are Shabbos-dik personalities. There are people who are the embodiment of that time called Shabbos. So Baal Shem Tov said, maybe I did something to insult the Talmud Chacham. And then he realized, he said, ah, yes, actually, there was a Talmud Chacham who I felt like I could have, maybe I should have been mechabed a little bit more, right? Or a Talmud Chacham wasn't being treated properly by people in the community, and I should have taken a stand on behalf of that Talmud Chacham. So maybe that was my Chil Shabbos. It doesn't say the story here. It doesn't say the end of the story here. But when Rav Moshe Wolfson tells a version of this story in his Sefer Emunah Sitecha in Parshas Naso, he says that Motzei Shabbos, the Baal Shem Tov traveled to the Pnei Yoshua to be Meshamishim as a tikkun, because he felt he had a disrespect for Talmidei Chachamim in the smallest measure. But he traveled to the Pnei Yeshua, and it says that Motzei Shabbos, Baal Shem Tov came like a servant before the Pnei Yeshua, his master, and said, Rebbe, I want to light your pipe for you. He lit his pipe for him, that Motzei Shabbos. That was his way of being metake in this lack of respect for Talmidei Chacham. He came to be Meshamish at Talmid Chacham, and he lit the Pnei Yeshua's pipe for him. That's the mice. So the Baal Shem Tov didn't look at the other guy and say, oh, this guy needs a lot of work on his Shabbos. He's Bechal Shabbos for Hesya. It's Chil Shabbos in the middle of the street. Baal Shem Tov looked at himself and said, I also must have a little bit of Chil Shabbos. Kovish is Yitzro, conquer your own Yitzhara. Kol Negam Adam Roa Chutzmei Nigei Atzmo. It's easy to see all the Negam, all the Tzaras by everyone else, but you see your own Negam. And again, that's what Rabbi Nachman's saying here. Sometimes you'll say, what do you mean? Yeah, I see I have a problem. Yeah, but what about all those other problems? Am I allowing this one thing to overshadow other things? I have to. It's hard to work on a lot of things at once, but I have to do a full assessment of myself and be honest with where I'm holding in life. Okay, turn to side two of the page and we'll end with one more amazing insight. Yeah. Not a Talmud per se, but a contemporary. So he felt he was one of the Gedolei Hador, so he went to be Mishani. Yeah, that's how Rav Wolfson brings the story. No. Well, who did he consider the Gedolei Hador to be?
I thought that would be it.
Oh, yeah, but he didn't. He never had Sheikhas, direct Sheikhas, then. Wow. He wanted to meet with him. It never happened. It's a whole nice. He wanted to go to him.
What is direct Sheikhas?
I mean, he didn't have a direct connection to. No, there were people, the Baal Shem Tov and the Rachaim HaKadosh very much wanted to get together. They knew of each other. They wanted to have a meeting, but it never happened. It never happened. Yeah.
What a time.
Again, I don't know what in that veldt means. I don't know. It's not a time period.
A bunch of Greek guys in that generation.
A lot of Greek guys in every generation. Look at all the Greek guys in this generation. I'm saying, what are you?
All-timers.
Yeah. I don't know. What was the greatest century of Jewish history? I don't know. That's like a hard question. All right, let's end with this Vart, just to highlight this point one last way, and it's an amazing insight. Rashi in Parshas Korach. You have to understand, Korach was a person who was a little bit self-absorbed with other people's, you know, self-absorbed with his own gaiva. Again, Korach was a tzaddik, and we have to be careful, even though the Torah paints him as not the best of people, as you know. Right? But Korach was a tzaddik. Korach was a zakin b'Yisrael. He was not a lightweight. But Korach was very busy challenging Moshe and Aaron for their, you know, for their problems, for overstepping authority. And Korach had his own problems that he needed to deal with. And that's exactly part of what the problem was with Korach. Rashi, in Parshas Korach, asks, how did Korach get so caught up in this machlokas? To the point that the Torah actually has a commandment in the Torah, according to some, it's one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah, when the Torah says, Lo tiek Korach ve'adaso, don't be like Korach and his wicked assemblage. That's actually a lo sase. There's a prohibition in the Torah, just like it says, don't eat, you know, not kosher. It also says, don't be a person who gets involved in machlokas. Don't be someone who makes machlokas, like Korach. We don't need the earth to swallow people up because things got so bad. So Rashi says, I don't understand, Korach's a smart guy. How did Korach not realize what was happening here? How did he let it get so out of control? Korach, source number 5, Korach shepikeach haya. Korach was a pikeach. What's a pikeach? Smart person. Korach was a sharp person. Pikeach means a person of insight. Right? Not just a person who has book knowledge. A person who's like insightful. Who's able to analyze a situation. So Korach was a pikeach. Ma ra'a l'shtus zeh. How did he get so caught up in this nonsense? It's insane. Says Rashi, Eino hitato. His eye deceived him. His eyes misled him. What does that mean? Ra'a shel shelis gedola yotza mimenu. He saw his great descendants, those who would come from him, amongst them Shmuel, Sheshakol Keneged Moshe Va'aron. Shmuel was a descendant of Korach. Right? And when he saw that Shmuel was coming from him, and he knew that Shmuel would be in some ways compared to Moshe and Aaron. Yeah, anyone know where is Shmuel to Moshe and Aaron? Think Kabbalah Shabbos? Right? Moshe Va'aron. The Kohen Av, Shmuel, the Kari Shemo. So Korach somehow knew that Shmuel in some way would be on the level of Moshe and Aaron. So Korach said, if my descendant, you read the Sadoros, if the one who's going to come from me is going to be compared to Moshe and Aaron, so that makes me much greater than Moshe and Aaron. Right? So he saw, some, whatever this Rashi means, the deep Rashi, he saw Shalsheles Yuchsin, he saw, again, he saw his family tree and his future. He saw such great people are going to come from him, so he said, that makes me that much greater. I must be the greatest. I must be greater than Moshe now. And he started up with Moshe and Aaron. He made machlokas, saying, who are you to take all the authority for yourself? Aaron, you're the Kohen Gadol. Moshe, you're like the Melech, you're the king. What about me? I'm greater than both of you. He explains the Yalkut HaGershuni, Rav Gershon Stern. He was a Hungarian Rav from Med, Hungary. He writes in his Sefer Yalkut HaGershuni, Vayikach Korach, the final source. Perish Rashi, Lokach es Atzmo. Right? Vayikach Korach, what did he take? He took himself. He was self-absorbed. He wasn't able to assess the situation. He only saw the good in himself and the bad in others. Yesh lefaresh, dihine Rashi zal kosav korach shepikeach haya ma'ra al ishtuzeh. Eino hitato rashal shalas gedola yotzam imenu shmuel sheshakol keneged Moshe v'aron. The Rashi we just learned. Va'inyan hu explains the Yalkut HaGershuni, Rav Gershon Stern, an amazing vart. Look at this. Va'inyan hu, al pi ma she'amru chazal. The Gemara says in Maseches Yoma, b'pnei ma lo nimshecha malchus beis Shaul. Why did Shaul HaMelech's kingdom not last? Shaul was a king for a couple of years. Why didn't it last? David HaMelech was a king for 7 years and then 33 more years. David HaMelech had a long Malchus. Shaul HaMelech a couple of years and he was retired from the Malchus. Why? So the Gemara asked this question. The Gemara says, Mipnei shelo haya bo shum dofi. Because he didn't have any dofi. What does that mean? I'll translate very loosely as baggage. If you don't have any baggage, then it's very easy for you to make mistakes. If you think you're perfect, it's very easy for you to make mistakes. If you're a person who has risen to a position of power, and you're scared that maybe one day, right, someone's going to find some like perverted joke you wrote in your yearbook, yeah? So you tread more cautiously because, like, you know, I know that they've got some stuff on me. So if I cross any lines, you know, I've got some skeletons in the closet. And if they put them out in the public eye, it's going to look really bad for me. But if you think that you're perfect, you think you could just get away with anything. You're never going to get caught. You don't have anything to be afraid of. So because Shaul HaMelech had such a pristine life, right, that became his downfall. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rishum Bar Yochai, Ein Ma'amidin Parnes Al Tzibur, we don't assign a person to a position of authority, Elaim Kein Kufa Shal Shratzim Tluya Lo Me'achrav. Unless, the literal translation, there's a kupa, there's a box of shratzim. What are shratzim? What? Yeah, bugs or creepy crawly things, you know? Rodents. Unless there's a box of rodents that's hanging right behind him. Meaning, unless he's got some skeletons in the closet. Unless he's got some like really gross things right behind him. Right? But if he thinks, if he's so perfect in his own eyes, then he could be a very dangerous leader. You need him to be balanced. You need him to know you're also a human being. You've made mistakes also. Don't let your new position of authority go to your head. That's what Chazal are saying. Shim tazuach daito alav, that if he gets, a little bit, his power goes to his head, omrim lo chazur le'acharecha. If he gets a little out of control, we just hint him, remember, I know you're a big Rosh Yeshiva now, but like, remember we were friends in high school, wink, wink. Like, it keeps a person level-headed. It keeps a person to understand, you know? Don't be so holier than thou. You aren't always so holy yourself. You had some things in your past also. David Hayibo Shemetz Dofi. So David HaMelech, what was the baggage that David came into life with? Who did he come from? The Osi Meirus HaMoavia, that David came from what? From Rus, who came from Moav. Moav was the child of an incestuous relationship, Lot and his daughter. So David had some weird stuff in his past. So because of that, David was a humble king, and David had a very strong malchus. But Shaul, who was always like a perfect, you know, his life was just too perfect, things fell apart. Very interesting, very deep idea that Chazal are saying.
If you look more recent, Boaz had a illegal relationship as well.
Right? And there's a lot of depth to that also, that such holiness comes from sometimes such broken things. But that's a different point. But that's an important point. So now, Vihine Moshe, take a look inside. Let's finish the piece. Vihine b'Moshe v'Aaron gamkin hayeshem etzdofi. Did Moshe and Aaron have baggage? They did. You know what Moshe and Aaron's baggage was? They were also born from a forbidden relationship. Really? Yes. Ki amram nasa doda so shasida Torah lasur. Who were Moshe's parents? Amram Yocheved. And what was their biological relationship?
She was his aunt.
And what is the Torah? Now, I understand Moshe and Aaron were born before the Torah was given. But when Hashem declares in the Torah that it's prohibited to marry your aunt, and the greatest leader of the Jewish people's own father married his aunt, it looks kind of weird for Moshe and Aaron.
Well, Abraham married...
Okay, fine. But Moshe and Aaron had baggage. Moshe and Aaron had baggage. Their father married their mother in a way that the Torah would prohibit. An uncle can marry his niece, but a nephew can't marry his aunt. Okay? So that was embarrassing for them. So says the Al-Karai Gershuni. So therefore, because Moshe and Aaron had baggage, they became really amazing leaders of Klal Yisrael. It's a very deep idea. Chazal are saying, Gemar and Yoma, Daf Chav Beis, that if you want to be successful, you have to, you know, you have to realize that life is not always perfect. That's what makes for good leaders. Aval al Korach. So, but now you'll ask about Korach. Korach shepikeach haya chacham v'ashir v'yachson. So the question we're saying, Korach, you're a rich person. You're a smart person. You're a bal yichus. You came from good lineage. Ma ra l'shtus zeh. Korach, why do you think you have the right to be a parnes al tzibur? That was a tease. He's coming on Monday, right? Hashem. Why do you think you have a right to be a Parnes al Tzibur? Again, if the rule is to be successful as a Jewish leader, you have to have baggage. Korach, you don't have any baggage. So how did Korach think he could be a successful leader? You hear the question? You have to have baggage to be a successful leader. How did Korach think that he could be successful if he didn't have any baggage? So Korach looked into the future. And who did he see is going to come from him? What did Rashi say? Who did he see in the future? Shmuel. He saw Shmuel. And he said, Shmuel was an unbelievable leader of Klal Yisrael. He really was. The way Shmuel would travel around the different parts of the country, as the Navi describes, being a leader, giving chizuk and inspiration to Klal Yisrael. Shmuel was an amazing leader. As Shmuel held his position for many years, and Shmuel didn't have any baggage, so maybe the rule is not an absolute rule, right? Meaning maybe there are exceptions to the rule. If Shmuel could be so successful without having any baggage, so maybe I can too, said Korach. What did Korach fail to realize, Chevra? What did Korach fail to realize? He was Shmuel's baggage. He was Shmuel's baggage. You know why Shmuel was successful in the future? Did Shmuel have anything embarrassing in his past? Yes. You know what he had embarrassing in his past? Korach, that he was a descendant of Korach. So Korach looks into the future, and he says, well, I don't understand. Shmuel's going to, I can see that Shmuel's going to be very successful. It's Baal Ruach HaKodesh. I see that Shmuel's going to be very successful, despite the fact that Shmuel comes from such a fine person, such fine lineage. So maybe I can also become a leader, even though I don't have any baggage. What he failed to realize, says the Alkara Gershuni, is that by the time Shmuel is born, Shmuel is also born into a life of baggage because of Korach. The disgraceful downfall of Korach was the baggage that Shmuel would carry around. And because he had baggage, he was able to be a successful leader. To me, this is the ultimate vart of a person just not realizing what's going on with himself. Not realizing that he is the problem. I'll end with a meiser. Mendel Futterfass was a great Chabad mashpia. Spent a lot of time in jail because he learned Torah and tried to teach Torah. So he said he learned one time when he was sitting in jail an amazing lesson. He was sitting in jail with a bunch of real thugs, real criminals. And somehow these guys, like they had a whole system of getting things that they needed in jail. They could get cigarettes. They had a whole system of getting things from outside of jail. And they had a pack of playing cards, he said, which was illegal. They weren't allowed to have cards. And they had a whole system. They had a whole system by which they would, you know, play cards. And they would take turns with the lookout. And if any of the you know, guards were coming, in like 2 seconds, they would hide the cards. So the guard came by one day, and he, you know, they gave the signal. 2 seconds, the cards are hidden away. And the guard comes by, and he sees them, and he's like, senses, they're like, something's going on over here. He's like, what's going on here? You have some playing cards? There's a rumor that you guys have playing cards. Well, we don't have playing cards. He comes in, he starts looking around, checks the mattresses. And these guys are like professional thieves, you know, they're like passing the cards. They can hide them, pickpocketing, you know, they can hide them anywhere. All right, and so he doesn't find the cards. And the guard comes back another time, again, like, he sees that they're up to something. The guard finally said, I know something's going on here. So he says, I'm strip searching all of you. He forces them to get undressed. I'm turning this cell inside out, upside down. I'm going to find those playing cards. And you're all going to be sent to solitary confinement. So they're searching and searching and searching. Mamish, the cards are gone. And Mendel's sitting there and he's saying, this is unbelievable. Like, where on earth did they put the cards? He couldn't understand. He could not understand where they put the cards. And the guard is searching and searching and searching. All right, finally the guard gives up and he says, okay, all right, I guess the rumors aren't true. Right. And as the guard is, you know, they're walking out, okay, they walk the guard out, okay. And then Rav Mendel sees, they sit down and they start playing cards again. He said, where on earth were the cards? How did you do that? So they started to laugh. He said, where were the cards? They said, when he was searching all of us, we put the cards in his pocket. They were such professional pickpockets that they were able to slip the cards into the guard's pocket and to take the cards right back out on his way out of the cell. So Mendel said, wow, what an amazing thing. A person can be so busy, you're searching everyone else, you don't realize that the thing that you're searching for is mamash in your own pocket. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us to be honest Jews. We're able to look at ourselves in an honest way. Again, there's a lot here. Right? Don't allow ourselves, again, to allow any one thing in our life to cause us to ignore other big things that are going on in our life. but to be able to make an honest assessment of ourselves, and not chas v'shalom to spend our whole life being busy pointing out other people's mistakes, but to just to be able to look at myself, and to look at myself in a broad way, and to see all of the things that are going on, and then to be able to tackle them, to address them, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, with Hashem's help, one at a time. Okay? Shkoyach. So hopefully the Mashpil will be with us. That's the schedule.